This is Kevin Richards back with another segment of Going Behind the Research. So just as a reminder, rather than providing a forum to discuss research that's conducted in health and physical education, the Going Behind the Research segment focuses on telling the stories that surround research we read in scholarly journals. Globally, the segment aims to humanize research by providing a forum to discuss the motives that draw researchers towards topics and studies, challenges and successes experienced along the way, and lessons learned that transcend individual publications that impact future research decisions. Each episode features an interview with one or more members of an authorship team to discuss the stories behind a selected publication. And today we're really excited and happy to have Laura Alfrey with us. She's going to talk about the publication called An Expansive Learning Approach to Transforming Traditional Fitness Testing in Health and Physical Education, Students' Voices, Feelings, and Hopes. That article was published in Curriculum Studies in Health and Physical Education and will be linked in the show notes for today's episode. So, Laura, thank you so much for joining us today. Really happy to have you on board.
Thank you so much for having me.
So just to get us started, before we get behind the research, if you could, please give us a brief overview of the study with a reminder that the article will be linked in the show notes of today's episode for anybody who's interested in reading more.
Sure. Thank you, Kevin. The aim of the study was really to see what we could achieve if we used an expansive learning approach. So that has its roots in cultural historical activity theory and was developed largely by Engstrom and colleagues. And we wanted to apply that to fitness testing within PE, physical education. So what an expansive learning approach prompts us to think about or to ask is really, why are we doing this? So that was the question that we applied to fitness testing. And the three kind of contexts that the expansive learning approach prompts us to move through are the context of criticism, which is not necessarily negative. It's more just questioning and debating, why are we doing this? The context of discovery, you know, what could other possibilities look like? And then the context of practical social application, which is, well, do our ideas work? So really, the broad project is about working those through those three contexts. This paper in particular is really just focused on the first two, which is criticism and discovery.
Wonderful. Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. I think that critique and criticism can be a really powerful tool for learning and growth. So excited to hear you frame it that way. So let's start broad. What got you interested in this research topic or area more generally? And how does this study fit with your broader line of inquiry?
Okay, this is a really long thread, and I promise I won't talk.
That's okay. Take us on a journey.
The easy one, which is my broader program of research, that's really about how we can leverage policy, including curriculum, pedagogies, and teacher professional learning to promote education equity and inclusion in physical education. That's kind of what ties everything for me. And this study, I think, exemplifies all of those things. I've been able to leverage and tap into those three threads throughout this project. In terms of how I got interested in this research area, this really is a long thread. So 30 years ago, student in high school, loved fitness testing. And I loved it because I was one of the three girls who enjoyed and engaged in physical education. And I was also competing in athletics out of school. So it was a fun thing to do. Yeah, it was a challenge and it was motivating. 20 years ago, I am teaching in primary schools across three in the north of England. And I was employed mainly to work across these three schools due to my experience around health and fitness. So because that was how I was badged, you know, the health and fitness person, I fitness tested primary school kids on a very regular basis across three schools. You know, I made it fun and I thought it was fine. And then I was looking for next steps and I applied for a scholarship to do a PhD at Loughborough University in the Midlands in England. And that was with Lorraine Kale of Kale and Harris Fitness Testing Firm and Louisa Webb. And the nature of that scholarship meant that the topic was already chosen, but I obviously applied because I was interested in it. And the topic was to examine physical education teachers' pedagogies and professional learning related to an area of the curriculum there called health-related exercise. I'm not sure if it still exists, but that was a component of the curriculum where, you know, meant to learn about health promotion through exercise. But one of the findings from my PhD was that fitness testing was the most popular way for secondary physical education teachers in England to teach about health. So it wasn't a key focus of my study at all, but it was one that stuck with me in terms of, well, that seems a bit problematic, or at least requires some further thought. In 2008, I moved to Australia to begin work at Monash Uni. I thought, I'll repeat my PhD study and I'll see what happens, right? It was an absolute flop because the political landscape was so different. The curriculum was so different that the questions I was asking just did not lead me anywhere. But what did emerge from that attempt, that flop, were findings around fitness testing. So that was similar to England, i.e. when I said, okay, well, how do you teach about health within the practical movement of physical activity thread of the curriculum here, which is called health and physical education in Australia, right. Fitness testing still emerged as the most popular. So it was the data from those conversations that led to my work with Michael Gard in 2014 and 2019 around what and why do Australian physical education teachers do in the name of fitness testing. So, that's kind of the what, the why, and the how. And then I was going to stop. And then I decided there was more work to do. So,
yeah.
We'll talk about it as we move forward, hey?
Yeah. That's wonderful. So let's narrow the focus a little bit. And I think you kind of alluded to some of this at the very beginning of your answer to that last question. But if you could tell us a little bit about the circumstances surrounding this particular study. So kind of narrowing down from your broader focus to this particular study, what brought you to this particular research question?
Yeah, good question. So for decades, we've had a growing and burgeoning set of data around fitness testing in physical education, both in terms of why teachers do it and how students experience it.
Yeah.
And from that, some fabulous recommendations have been generated. Yeah, Lorraine Kale, Joe Harris, Sally Yarga, Kevin Mercier, Brendan O'Keefe, there's lots of people doing work in this space, and it's generated so much great data and good ideas and practical recommendations for teachers. Yeah, but what I couldn't see, at least in my little world over here in Melbourne, Australia, was impact in the classroom.
Okay.
And I still, that's probably a very complex process that I probably won't get into here, but that was really what I wanted to experiment with. So this project and this paper in particular is about trying to document this experiment to see how we might best, or even not even best, how we might approach and support the transformation of curriculum and pedagogies related to fitness testing, and to support teachers and students in exercising their own transformative agency, for the purpose of more educative, equitable, and safer fitness testing in schools. So yeah, this was really about what could we do to support this translation of knowledge into practice.
So would it be fair to say that at least part of the motivation here is changing the narrative around fitness testing? Because I think that sometimes fitness testing gets a little bit of a bad reputation, and sometimes it's used in ways that can kind of highlight students in ways that makes them feel uncomfortable and in very social environments. So is changing that narrative part of the motivation?
Yeah, I think so. I think in order to change the narrative, we need to change the pedagogies.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And how fitness testing is understood and how the purpose is articulated to students. So that's, that was a large part of what this was about.
Yeah, I love that. So to change the narrative, we have to change the pedagogies. I couldn't agree more. And I think that you could say that, at least in the U.S. context, for physical education, quite a bit more broadly, you know, beyond just fitness testing. So talk to us about the process of setting up this study and the methods you used. What did you learn from a methodological perspective that you've carried forward with you beyond this study?
Yeah, great. It's probably important to say that the teacher that I worked most closely with was a graduate of Monash University Health. They'd known me for a decade, and there was a trusting relationship there. And I think that's really important because this kind of work can't be sprung on people. It's really quite effective, and it could be quite confronting. So I think to have that kind of relationship is really important. So yeah, it didn't come from nowhere, and the school wasn't plucked out of a hat. I had a relationship with the school already, and the teacher in particular, and the students had kind of seen me hanging around for one reason or another. So the research questions I'll just mention quickly because I don't think we have yet. Was one, what are Australian secondary students' feelings and thoughts towards current fitness testing practices? And then secondly, how would they change those fitness testing practices and why? And we answered those questions via data generated, mainly through semi-structured focus groups with year eight students. In those focus groups, we embedded art-based methods, whereby students were asked to draw pictures about how they felt before and after their fitness testing lesson.
And how did that go?
Oh, it was amazing. And some of the drawings are in the paper, and I obviously made some purposeful decisions around which drawings I chose. But there was a really wide variety of feelings and, I guess, representations of how fitness testing made the students feel. But it was, a really valuable method. And I think I've used art-based methods in the past, but mainly kind of mapping, you know, where physically acting and where do you feel safe and where don't you feel safe. And the drawing and the personalization around feelings kind of gave another dimension for me. So it's the affective element of this project is something I'll definitely take forward methodologically.
Yeah, I love that.
Kind of, like the importance of embedding a dimension. Obviously, not all research would align with this, but I think a lot of mine will. And also how to support participants in sharing their feelings and emotions, because obviously that can be an intimidating space or task for some. Still on affect, this is all quite unexpected for me. I learned about the importance of affect in teacher professional learning. Your work on socialization and I speak around teachers' philosophy and why we hold particular beliefs. So that wasn't new, but the influence of affect on prompting teachers to engage in teacher professional learning was something I've not had first-hand experience of before. That's still something I'm pondering on. I think there's more to that. But I haven't got anything to add yet. watch this space. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say at the very beginning there, as you answered that question, you talked about that relationship building process and the need to kind of invest in cultivating and building those relationships with teachers and out in schools, and how these sites just don't come from nowhere. And I think that that's just such an important message for the research enterprise in physical education in general, that, that schools that we're working with, it shouldn't just be kind of this drop in and drop out and, we come and get data and then we're gone. I mean, it really is. I think more meaningful from a methodological perspective, from a community-based research perspective, when we're building and cultivating those connections that last beyond individual studies and really kind of create a partnership in a broader sense.
Yeah, I completely agree, Kevin. And it really is symbiotic. Like, it takes time, years, but once it's established, it really is symbiotic. You know, the teachers, the schools can make calls for research that they would benefit from. But equally, you know, if we have a project that we'd like to carry out, they're usually more than happy to say yes because, you know, they trust you and you have the relationship and it's a symbiotic one.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. How did this study inform your scholarly identity or future research activity? So in other words, what did you learn here that influenced the work that's come after?
Well, thanks to COVID restrictions, access to schools for research, it's still going. But what we learned from this phase will definitely inform the next one, which should hopefully, fingers crossed, happen very, very soon. And that's the context of kind of enactment and social application and the impact of the changes that will coincide with the students and the teachers. So that's what's coming next. In terms of my scholarly identity, if I think honestly and carefully about why I did this, it was because, as I said earlier, it was because I wanted to support change in school.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go beyond critique. So I've been positioned by some scholars in the past as, you know, very critical of fitness testing. And I'm often the one cited as the against person, right? Which I'm not. I am very much against miseducative, inequitable, unsafe fitness testing.
That's it.
Right?
And somehow, hand in hand with fitness testing.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I'm all for, and I think all physical education curriculum should include high quality fitness education, which includes, you know, knowledge and understanding our components of fitness and how to measure and all those things.
Yep.
I'm fully supportive if it's all those things. Yeah, educative, equitable, and safe.
Yep.
Love it. So in terms of my identity, this was about, one, seeing how we could translate what we know about fitness testing into practice. But it was also about, and I did actually think about this until you posed the question, kind of making me feel more confident in viewing myself as someone who does critical and transformative research with teachers and students, not on them. And I'm the first to admit my early work following my PhD was critical. Yeah. And I still view myself as a critical scholar. But as and when appropriate and possible, I think it's also important that I do the transformative work with teachers, students, communities, whatnot.
That's wonderful. I love that. So this next question, I think, is my second favorite one that I get to ask on the interview guide, which is, do you have any stories accompanying the process of conducting this investigation you feel comfortable sharing that give us a look under the hood, and bonus points for stories that make us laugh?
Oh, okay. This will definitely, I'd actually, when I've listened to the podcast and I've heard that question, I'd be like, I would have no idea what to say about it. And you've asked me and I still have no idea what to say. There's a thing that pops up.
Yep.
It's definitely not funny at all, but whenever I think about this project, it's the one thing that my brain always goes back to. And it kind of exemplifies why I'm doing this. So the way I organized the lesson was that the kids would do their fitness testing lesson with their teacher as normal. I had no impact on what that looked like. And then as they finished the beep test, the multi-stage fitness test, as they finished, I would kind of take them off to focus group to give them. But one student, he came in and it was winter, but he had dark sunglasses on and he had like a hunter's cap, you know, with the flaps and the, is that what you
got? Yep.
And he had all the flaps down, and he had this big jacket on, and he was trying to cover his body and himself, and all, and he pushed himself right to the corner of the gym. So when I saw he wasn't participating, I said, "Oh, you know, would you like to come talk to me?" just the things he said, the way he presented himself was, for me, confronting in the first instances. But then the commentary around not just fitness testing, but as you mentioned earlier, this can really be an example of what's happening in physical education more broadly.
Sure.
You know, and he was like, well, my opinions don't matter. You know, I'm just trying to provide a space for some voice and agency. And he's like, well, no one wants to listen to me. And the kind of things I want to do, I can't do here. And when I asked him, it was resistance training. And they do have this particular school has a great facility for resistance training. But talking to him and both the visual of how he was presenting himself in that space and also his commentary around experiences of PE and fitness testing. That's the kind of person I'm trying to help. But I don't want any student to feel the PE is not a space for them.
Yeah.
And he quite visibly felt that that wasn't a space for him.
Yeah, that's quite a poignant experience.
Yeah, so that's why we...
Yeah, yeah.
Mm, yeah.
They can hear it. Yeah. So based on this investigation, what lessons did you learn about the research process that you can share with other members of the academic community and our listeners?
I think I've shared the key ones. I think the importance of doing this kind of transformative work with teachers, students, and schools that you have a strong relationship with, which I mentioned earlier, and I haven't talked about transformative agency, but it's linked to this idea of expansive learning.
And
I did inform the project. But what that prompts you to do is from Engstrom as well. It prompts you to get commitment to change from the outset.
Yep. Yep.
So as a researcher, what transformative agency prompted me to do was say to the school and the teachers, this is what we're going to do. Please, can you commit to at least entertaining change and making some small changes if deemed appropriate from an educative perspective. That allowed me to do then, when I spoke to the students, I could confidently say, I'm going to ask your opinion. Your opinion matters. And your ideas are going to be discussed and debated and deliberated. And the plan is for some changes to be made into the future.
Yep. Love that.
And that made all the difference.
Yep.
You know, putting a spotlight on another project which focuses on student voice. I was speaking to some students from a different school, not related to fitness testing, and they were like, "We are tired." She was like, "The reason you didn't get many people to enroll on this research project is because we always get asked our ideas and nothing ever changes." So for me, that's I'll combine everything I've said up until this point and then add that commitment to change is really important.
Yeah, thank you so much. So before we close out the segment, is there anything else that you would like to share about this investigation that we've not been able to talk about yet?
I think so, Kevin. I think I've got it all off my chest.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful, and I really appreciate you sharing. And that brings us to what is my favorite question to get to ask, which is, because we're trying to get to know the stories behind the research, it's fun to add in with some rapid fire questions that help us to get to know you a little bit better. I have six categories. Are you comfortable giving me your quickest responses?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. Favorite color?
Blue.
Okay. Favorite animal?
Dolphin.
Dolphin. Oh, I saw some beautiful dolphins off the coast of Australia when I was there last.
Oh, they're just so graceful.
John said that you call them a pod when they're in a group, and they were just so beautiful.
Yeah. So friendly and playful. Yeah. Gliding around.
Yeah. So favorite season of the year?
Ooh, summer.
Ooh, okay. All right. Favorite place on earth?
I'm going to have to say the Yorkshire Dales.
Okay, tell me a little bit about them.
Well, I was born in Yorkshire, born and raised. It's just a beautiful place. So I'll say Malham in particular. So there's a huge tarn She's like a big, I guess, cliff face, and it's like two country pubs and a river and a waterfall and cows. Yeah, it's home. Home number one.
That sounds beautiful. And you just said what I was going to ask. That sounds like home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Favorite food?
Oh, I love food.
Me too.
Oh, man. Like, I just love it all. I'll say, I was going to say pizza. Friday night, nearly Friday. Friday night pizza. Yeah.
There we go. Friday night pizza sounds pretty fantastic. Last question. Favorite drink? Favorite thing to drink?
Gin and tonic on a warm day.
There you go. I've been on a gin kick lately. I've never been much of a gin person. My brother turned me on to it, and my partner is a gin drinker now too. And so I've kind of gotten to explore that a little bit.
Oh yeah, delicious cucumber, rosemary,
lemon. There you go. Well, thank you so much, Laura. I appreciate you joining us for this segment of Going Behind the Research. As a reminder. The article that we talked about today is linked in the show notes for the episode, so you can check out more of it there. And thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Awesome.